On Facebook.
Throughout the day, KPFT airs short announcements that help our listeners find out about events, community resources, or issues affecting the health and safety of the public. Typically 60 seconds, these PSAs must be non-commercial in nature and consistent with the overall mission of KPFT and the Pacifica Foundation. These announcements are produced at no cost to the submitting organizations. If you work with a nonprofit organization and have an event you'd like us to promote, visit kpft.org and submit a PSA request. You should generally submit a request at least 30 days in advance of the event to give us time to produce your announcement. Again, just visit kpft.org. Thank you. This is KPFT Houston.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Wow, that was quite the noise there. We started the show with a, I don't know, like some kind of malfunctioning robot. Technology Bites. Technology Bites!
Welcome to... Welcome.
Welcome to Technology The Imperfect Bites. Show.
Cool noise.
I don't know, Peter was like in the drum of a dryer or something.
Cool. Still sound like that, or
no? It just ended. It was like, but it was kind of like a rhythmic, like.
Somebody put a tennis shoe in with the dry clothes.
Welcome to. Is this going to be the opposite of last week's show?
So far, so good.
Jay's really low.
Oh man, he switched mics.
I have two mics. You got it figured out now? Good for you. All right. Welcome to Technology Bites. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Groovehouse's chair.
It's very rickety.
I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm the Freedom Phone.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
You're the Freedom Phone.
Turn it up, man.
We'll be back to pick you up later.
It's better than the Amazon Fire Phone.
Man, I want one. 99 cents or so.
Yeah, but you have to have a 2-year deal with AT&T with it still.
Well, there is that, I suppose.
So it's $240.99.
$1,600, I think, is what they said over the course of the game.
You have to have a data plan and everything, too.
Yep.
You can't just have, like, I'd like the one text message per month plan.
No, not at AT&T. They do it where, I think I mentioned that when I was looking into new phones. All those plans, all the different, you know, AT&T has several different confusing, you know, jump plan, or not jump, but one where you can switch your phone every 18 months or every 24 months or every 12 months and all these different plans and all that. And if you go through and run up all the numbers, you pay the same amount no matter what. There's no discount.
In the end, you paid for that phone.
Regardless, yeah. Or if you don't buy, I guess if you bought the phone outright, you can save a little bit. So that's why the 99-cent phone doesn't really save you much money at all.
Yeah, that's why I left AT&T because I was just an. I mean, the thing is, it's not that like nobody else did that. Pretty much every carrier did it, but it just annoyed me that, you know, I could get a phone and sign a 2-year contract and pay $50 a month. So I'm getting this cheap phone because I'm paying $50 a month, but then when my 2-year contract's up,
I still pay fifty bucks
a month. I don't get a new phone. If I do, I have to sign a new contract. I don't want to sign a new contract, but that's the only way I can get a phone through them, you know.
Plus they gave you no credit for the months that you paid the extra that you didn't have.
Yeah,
a new phone.
So for like, you know, for 2 years, I kept using the phone. Well, maybe not 2 years, maybe 6 months to a year. I kept using the phone that I'd already paid off. I was not under contract anymore. And then I went out actually and went to the Apple store and paid full price for an unlocked iPhone because it was the only way you could get an unlocked iPhone at that point in time. Only AT&T sold them other than Apple, and you could not get it unlocked from AT&T. And they would not unlock it after after your contract was over either. They would not unlock iPhones at all. So I went and paid full price for an iPhone. So now I paid full price for a brand new phone, and I'm still paying AT&T the subsidy, not on a contract, for a phone that I didn't get.
So you're really not maximizing your experience at all by doing that.
No.
No.
But I didn't want to be locked into a contract because I thought I might change.
So you could pay the same price month to month or not on a contract. There's no savings buying your own phone. There's no bring your own phone savings.
A contract doesn't give you a discount. It gives you a phone for the same price. So when you're out of contract, it's the same price. But under contract, you were paying for the phone every month. They don't tell you how much. They don't break it out like that. But you're paying some
phone
subsidy.
Maybe that's a loss leader. Maybe you're actually not paying off the phone in the 2-year contract time. Maybe that's how much it costs to deliver cell service, text, and internet to your phone.
So it's just paying off the couple $100 subsidy plus the price of the phone.
So it's just the people that are not under contract that are actually making money for the cell company.
So you're only really saving money on your phone if, well, they're not really subsidizing the phone so much. They're giving a discount on the phone for signing a contract with them, but it's not really suggested that the amount that you're paying per month goes towards that phone. It's just how much they're delivering service to you. Plus, you save money on the phone. Otherwise, you can buy a phone at full price, and it costs you more.
Right. Except finally, T-Mobile, because they were losing the war, decided that they were going to go to the model where you didn't have to sign a contract. You could bring your own phone, and the prices were cheaper because of it. And everybody else has now started to try to compete with them because T-Mobile actually got a whole bunch of customers doing that, including myself.
All right. Well, welcome to the show. We are talking cell phones, apparently, before anything else, because, you know, there was that big announcement yesterday, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit later. But in the meantime, we'd like you to visit us online at geekradio.com. You can also hang out with us in the IRC, irc.cuckoo.com. I made a really not very good effort in trying to upgrade our IRC client on the website. I could replace it with a IRC client that was so secure it didn't work. So if you don't use your own IRC client, you can join up using our IRC client on the website at geekradio.com. IRC, or if you do have your own client, irc.cuckoo.com. I said irc.cuckoo.com. And join channel Tech Bytes and hang out with us there. We had a great geek gathering. Barrett brought out all kinds of fun tech. We had a good turnout, too, I think.
Yeah, we got most of it working. We didn't get the flight tracking stuff working. So the second I got home, of course, it pops right up. I'm like, oh, it's that piece of software. But yeah, we were able to scare a lot of people into hopefully disabling their auto-join on the Wi-Fi.
Did you actually display information?
Yeah, we weren't logging anything. We were throwing all the information away. But so one of the modes we had it up, we were showing what your home network was. Or like all the different access points that your laptop, your cell phone, whatever you had on you, was reaching out for. So people would walk up and go, hey, that's my home network. And it's like, yes, it is. Yes, it is.
All right. So it was a good time. We had a good turnout. And it was, we dominated the whole place. We were all inside and outside. And thanks to Khan for having us and letting us hang out at his place. If you haven't been to a geek gathering, got to consider coming out to one. We'll have another one at the first Friday of next month. Next month. Yeah. All right. So.
Hey, just a second.
Wait.
So I have a question about that. So the auto join, it doesn't just ask what networks are available and what your SSIDs. The phones actually say, hey, I'm looking for this. Are you this?
That's the way that the protocol still works in such a way that the smart way to do it would be survey everything that's out there.
Anything matches.
Yeah, and see what matches. But it doesn't do that. It goes and it says, hey, what's my top preferred network? And it goes, hey, is this network out there? And then it goes like, okay, didn't get an answer. Must not be out there. And then it goes, hey, is my second best network out there? So all someone has to do is go,
wow, that's really bad.
I'm on that network.
Yeah.
So it acts like a drunk conventioneer looking for a hooker?
So how do you?
We did bring the software back from Vegas.
But since a Wi-Fi access point has an SSID and maybe it has encryption and it requires a password, if your phone's looking for that connection and it finds it, it applies the password to log in. So if you're going to spoof that, how do you get past
not the necessarily. So the way a lot of phones handle it is it'll try. And if it can't get in, it'll roll down and say, like, okay, let's try it without encryption. And only if you change the password will it go. Most people don't notice if they go from an encrypted network to an unencrypted network. Because a lot of phones don't say, hey, like when you're on an SSL site and you leave or you get mixed content, your browser says, hey, you've got mixed content, or hey, you're about to leave a place where it's no longer safe. When you switch over from like a WPA2 connection to a normal connection, it doesn't say, hey, you're switching from this to this, or hey, you're switching to web. It just lets you go.
But if it looks for a connection and it knows that connection is WPA encrypted and it has a password and it tries to connect and it's not WPA.
Well, that's not how it works. The way that it works is it goes and it says, hey, are you out there? And it says yes, and then the base station will go like, hey, well, actually the client will say, what do I need to connect? And the base station will go, give me the WPA2 password. And it goes, here you go. And then if we were to spoof the phone, the handset would go, if we were to spoof the base station, the phone would go, hey, what do I need to connect? The phone would say, nothing, come on in. I'm sorry, the base station would say, nothing, come on in. So it doesn't ask for that. It never puts that challenge up there.
Wow.
So the client doesn't have to answer it.
So if the access point does not require encryption, the phone says, oh, hey, this is easy, I'll just connect.
Yeah, it doesn't care.
That seems kind of crazy.
It's never going to say, oh, wait, hold on, I was able to connect.
This doesn't feel right. I feel uncomfortable. Show us where the access point touched you. I'm using the new iPhone 6. Wow. So you can just throw up an unencrypted Wi-Fi access point with that SSID, and if they reach out for it, they'll join.
So what people will do is there is software that will go, and you can actually knock people. You can deauthenticate the association. So say like you're associated KPF2.4, which I actually need the password for here in a second because I'm having to do this by hand. I forgot my laptop, so it was also afflicted. Sorry, no Barrett time. Is this the password real quick?
Oh, Mr. Hacker.
You don't want to say it online.
I think it is.
Steal it somewhere?
Now that's interesting to know, because I thought that the auto join was to just turn off so it wouldn't automatically join unknown networks or any network. Yeah, he knows.
The whole thing. Okay. Well, no, I'm missing some of it.
No, it's just the first one.
It's not working for me. Who knows? Okay, anyway. So, yeah, the encryption point is kind of moot. So there's a deauthentication packet that you can send to clients, and it doesn't have to be encrypted. So what you do is you send that packet, you knock everyone off, and unless, like, you're streaming a lot of stuff, chances are you're not going to notice, even if you are streaming, so there's a little bit of buffer there. And then you become that strongest signal, and they attach to you, and suddenly you're in the middle. I say you. I mean, you know, a nefarious person or someone on their own home
network.
Some
handlebarred, red-handed, mustachioed guy.
We were just showing out, you know, what you've got to be. See, I'm...
No, what I want to see, now that I think the next step that we need to do is that we need to go ahead and intercept someone's phone and then see what data is sent across the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I mean, that would be kind of...
Because that's when you start getting passwords and things like that.
That would be kind of illegal, but that's when you could run stuff like...
Just kind of.
Like SSL strip to like...
Are you sure it's illegal?
Well,
by coming to the Geek Gathering, you automatically waive your rights.
What we should do is we should bring... I wanted to do this maybe next time we'll bring some old, like, easy-to-break WEP stuff, and we'll teach people how to break into WEP, and then we'll also maybe, like, do some man-in-the-middle stuff. The fun stuff is to, like, you know, you can
people
Rickroll...
People in the middle, let's not be...
We can do people in the middle, person in the middle, being entity in the middle.
PIM.
Something, yeah. So you can actually, for instance, like, you people could go into a coffee shop and say, hey, whatever any YouTube video anyone asks for, we're going to Rickroll them. Like, send them here. So, you know, you can do, like, and people have, like, scripted that, where that's really easy to do. It's, like, already a program.
So or we could put up, like, fake cell phone towers and route everybody's cell call. Oh, wait,
we're
no, that's the police
that.
And the government.
No, <we're not>. No. So anyway, we are in deep geek doo-doo. At the Geek Gathering. That was a lot of fun. And it was cool. You had the table set up on the inside. A lot of people were hanging out. And it was like being at a little mini DEF CON. It was a lot, you know,
the plan for next Geek Gathering is to bring a couple more monitors, because we were doing it on a laptop. So we had to secure shell into the servers that we were using. So bring more monitors so we can have more than one thing running at one time.
All right. So has anybody heard from KD5? Because now I'm getting worried.
No, it's been a week and a half now. Have you texted or have you sent...
I don't know. I haven't seen him online. I haven't seen him in the IRC.
He's in line for the iPhone 6. I'm kidding.
All right, speaking of iPhone 6, let's do the Technology Bytes Info Shop from San Antonio with the San Antonio host of the show, Peter Hughes. And that's it for the Info Shop.
Thanks for that, Pete.
You didn't do it gravelly.
You're supposed to say, take it away, Info Shot.
Who was that?
Cuckoo.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Yeah, some people may accuse me of being an Apple fanboy, but, you know, the president is doing a primetime address to the nation. Something about the new iPhone. I didn't really follow it. ISIS, iPhone, something like that. So maybe none of you are listening right now. Anyways, this one, here's an interesting for real Apple fanboys that might bother some of you or be a sort of sad moment. I know I used to read this magazine. Longstanding Apple-themed publication Macworld has laid off much of its staff and is closing down its print edition, according to blog and Twitter posts, as well as USA Today's reporting it. Former editor-in-chief Jason Snell mentioned the information in a blog post, and staff from the company, including Dan Miller and Roman Loyola, have taken to Twitter to deny that Macworld is closing entirely while acknowledging job cuts. In his blog post, Snell adds that he's leaving the publication to focus on other projects. Miller says he will be with the company for another month to help with the transition and mentioned that the website will continue. At one point, it was a big deal, but obviously there's not as much advertising as used to be. They're also, you know, they also had the Macworld conference, which Apple was – that was the place where the big announcements often happened. But Apple pulled out in 2009, which took away a lot of the prestige of the event. It does – persist as Macworld iWorld, and a 2015 gathering is already scheduled for March 12th through 15th. But I don't know that Apple is really necessarily planning to go, even to go kick the corpse of Macworld. So that's a big change. Here's another interesting one. This is from T-Mobile, as we were talking about a little bit earlier. T-Mobile's CEO John Legere, attired in his traditional pink and black garb, which is T-Mobile's colors, took the stage in a San Francisco mobile store today, the day after the Apple announcement, which we'll get to. I'm putting that at the end because it's just easier to put all those new things in one spot. He immediately started down his long list of carrier bashing before announcing his company's seventh addition to its ongoing Un-carrier. So one of the things he announced is that every phone that T-Mobile sells from now on will come with Wi-Fi calling and texting. T-Mobile is calling it Wi-Fi Unleashed, and new smartphones will all come with Wi-Fi texting and calling baked in. And if current customers want to be part of the action, the carrier is opening an exclusive window in its Jump program, even if you're not ready for an upgrade. There's also no setup involved in using the service, according to T-Mobile. No apps or different IDs. Also, if you start a call on Wi-Fi and then go out of range, LTE will pick up the call seamlessly. Apple mentioned its partnership with T-Mobile and Wi-Fi calling yesterday at the iPhone event, focusing on this very piece of tech. T-Mobile is also handing out what they're calling personal cell spots, a router that lets users take advantage of Wi-Fi calling wherever you want. The device will be available for certain Simple Choice subscribers for free after a $25 refundable deposit. T-Mobile is also trying to keep you connected with unlimited texting on flight by partnering with Gogo, an in-flight connectivity service. You have to have a smartphone that's Gogo-enabled, which includes the Galaxy S5, HTC One M8, iPhone 5S, and LG G3, among others. So it's a pretty wide swath of smartphones that can do it. And obviously you have to be on an air carrier that's equipped with that service, but those added features are free. So Legere says this means basically every single accessible Wi-Fi spot is now a T-Mobile tower. And in other news, also promised that T-Mobile will surpass Sprint and become the third biggest carrier in the U.S. by the end of 2014, which who cares on that? The Wi-Fi thing, I think, could be of value, especially people when you're using your cell phone at home where you've got a good Wi-Fi network and probably better Wi-Fi than you have better Wi-Fi than you may have cell tower reception. So that may help. That may help some people out, and it's actually kind of an interesting step, which is what made it newsworthy. Now a couple new things that aren't Apple, and then we'll go to the Apple Palooza Fest that is the day after an Apple announcement. There's a new Xeon processor, the Grantley Enterprise processors. Intel made a big announcement this week during the Intel Developer Forum in San Francisco, unveiling the newest processors in the Xeon lineup. They offer a very large jump in performance over the previous Xeons thanks to the new Grantley platform. I guess they didn't want to have the new The new Intel chips increase the number of cores available in a single unit, but are also the first processors to use DDR4 in a server setting. They've got a bunch of different models, but they go up to 18 cores in the Grantley processors, surpassing the 12 that the previous Xeons topped out on. Part of the philosophy of the creation of the new processors had to do with software-defined infrastructure. We had the software-defined radio, well, now software-defined infrastructure. With the demands that cloud computers are making on services, Intel wanted to approach the workload in a different manner that was configurable to the needs of the business. Combined with telemetry, analytics, and automation actions, data centers can be designed to be better optimized with the new processors. So that's pretty awesome. I'm sure they're all extremely inexpensive since they're aimed at enterprise server farms. Still, it's interesting that a lot of this technology will eventually trickle down to us. Oh, networking is improved as the new Fortville 40 gigabit Ethernet networking is available for use with Grantley, as well as Springville 1 gigabit Ethernet. So they're already servers. The usual suspects are creating servers with the new processors. Cisco, Dell, HP, IBM, Lenovo, and Oracle have all started constructing units for sale. And then Dell had a cool announcement this week at their workplace event. They showed off a pair of new displays. First, a 55-inch widescreen with full HD resolution for teleconferencing. But then the most interesting one for people with who, you know, still use desktop computers and would like super high resolution, they previewed a 27-inch Ultra HD 5K monitor. You've heard us talk about 4K monitors. Well, this is a 5K monitor, and it's not like going to 11 on an amp. This is the display is 5120 pixels by 2880 Ultra HD 5K resolution. Ultra HD 5K is equivalent to 4 times the resolution of QHD and 7 times the resolution of full HD. It has the Dell Premier Color and anti-smudge and anti-reflective edge-to-edge glass to help with color accuracy and picture quality for color-critical work. The new monitor also has a pair of 16-watt integrated speakers. It has 6 USB ports of unspecified speed. Hopefully, you know, presumably that would be USB 3 at least, and 1 media card reader to seamlessly connect with a wide range of other peripherals. It's going to be, for that list of features, it ain't going to be cheap. It's about $2,500, and it'll be available in the last part of this year. So the big question is, you know, what devices actually can drive this thing with all those pixels. Presumably, by the time it comes out, I would guess that there'd be drivers so that you could put a Mac Pro to hook up a Mac Pro to it. I wonder, and they haven't said yet, if a, say, Retina display iMac or a Retina display, not a Retina. This is the kind of monitor that you would want to do like a Retina display iMac out of. If Retina display MacBook Pros, if they can drive this sucker or not, it'll be an interesting question, and we'll keep an eye. But it certainly seems like after a long time of where HD resolution, you know, 1080p resolution was everything, now suddenly they've discovered that you can, you know, put more pixels than that in a monitor and serve it out to the people. The only thing I wonder about is it's a 27-inch monitor. It almost seems like if you're going to have that many pixels that it could be a little bit larger, you know, 30 or 32 inch, and you'd still get that incredible pixel density, but you would also get a lot more space. You know, because if the pixels just keep getting bigger and the monitor doesn't, then when you put more stuff in it, it's all going to be tiny. You know, if you put 10 browser windows in that, it's going to be smaller because it's still going across only 27 inches of, you know, monitor diagonal. But it's a good start. And, I think the number of pixels in your monitor, you can't ever have too many unless your computer won't drive them. Now the Apple-y stuff, a lot of it, you know, I mean, it's been out for more than a day. The news has been out there. Obviously, they announced most of the rumors came fairly close, it seems like. They announced the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6 Plus. And so the iPhone 6 is already bigger than an iPhone 5S. So the basic iPhone 6 is a larger phone than an iPhone S. It's 4.7 inches diagonally. The iPhone 6 Plus is a 5.5-inch screen, so it's roughly an inch longer and, I don't know, half an inch wider. There's a site called wonderhowto.com that has a pair of exact size templates that you can download of the new iPhones, so you can cut them out and see what the size would be for you to carry. So if you wanted to play with it, you can see if it's suitable, if it would fit in your pocket. Most of the that's one of the things that I think might be of issue for people is the sort of phablet size. Obviously, if you're not wearing pants that have pretty big pockets, it ain't gonna fit. You may want to go by a store and see how that kind of device, if it fits or not. And some of the case makers in response have made cases for the iPhone 6 Plus that also have where you can clip them on your belt. you know, they've made that an integral part so that if you don't have room in the pocket, you can put it in. And then one in the NFC, the non-contactless contactless, you know, the payment thing, was one of the biggest things, and the thing that I think more technology people are really talking about, because it could be a big deal. They're calling it Apple Pay, which leads into one other thing that they did differently in this one, which I think kind of means that it's after, you know, it's the post Steve Jobs era at Apple, is it's Apple Pay. It's not iPay. And the watch, which we'll talk about in a minute, is the Apple, actually the Apple logo watch, not an iWatch. Although Tim Cook did call it an iWatch in the course of talking about it sometimes. So Apple Pay is Apple's mobile payment solution. It uses Apple's Passbook app, NFC in the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus, a special authentication chip, and Touch ID, the built-in fingerprint reader that the 5S has, and which is, of course, now in the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus. During the unveiling, Tim Cook showed a short video where a customer fumbled with her credit card and ID, then another short clip where she used a new iPhone 6 to pay with a tap on an NFC reader. It happened so fast in the video that Tim Cook jokingly asked if everyone wanted to see it again, but it does seem to be a big deal. It's not a sure thing. While Tim Cook's Apple Pay video made credit card payments look difficult, NFC readers don't have broad scale acceptance, except Apple has lined up a lot of stores that are going to use, are going to offer it. There's an article in Mashable that says five reasons why Apple Pay is the sleeper hit of the Apple event. Actually, and NFC is not necessary. You don't have to, they don't have to do NFC, so you can do a different way. Target's going to enable Touch ID based payments within its own app, which means that instead of you tapping the phone against an NFC terminal, you can be, I guess, in the store and pay using that technology without having to, you know, them having to install new stuff. It's secure. You know, we've all heard about the places where they've cracked, like Target and Home Depot. The deal is that it uses a token system. You know, it has biometric identification to verify that it's you, and it's got so it's multi-factor, you know, kind of two-factor, and then the third factor is the secure element chip inside the phone, which helps generate a one-time use code for payments. So instead of the way it works now, where they hand your credit card number over, then it uses a code system that generate the thing for your transaction. And so they can't crack it and get your credit card number. They can just crack it and get the one-time use code that your system generated for that one transaction. So that could be quite nice. You know, the five things on Mashable is they say basically that, you know, it's on iPhones, and so it's going to be on a lot of people are going to be around using it. And so that may be the spark to get it to work more globally. Credit card companies are backing it. Amex, MasterCard, Visa, Wells Fargo, and others are all part of Apple Pay, where when Google unveiled Google Wallet, Visa wouldn't do it. And the credit card companies were building their own consortium. Unfortunately, it was called ISIS. They changed the name. That was building its own mobile payment platform. So this may help consolidate all of it. So, you know, Apple Pay is going to be a big thing, and it'll be interesting to see how that goes. And then finally, and they did the classic. I mean, I think I was watching some of the live blogs, and it was a real moment. You know, there was the Steve Jobs famous just one more, you know, one more thing, and they did it. They did the one more thing, and they announced the Apple Watch. It doesn't use iOS as such. I mean, you can't pinch and zoom, and it uses the fob part, the dial piece that's on the side is used to do a lot of the controlling. to make it work better. And then the biggest question is about the battery life, because, you know, obviously it's kind of more like a cell phone than a watch. And the reports are that you will probably have to charge it every night. It's going to come out, the iPhone 6 comes out next week. You'll be able to buy it next week. I believe it's the 18th they start selling them. The Apple Watch is going to be in the spring, you know, next year, the beginning of next year. So kind of interesting that they showed it to people and announced it, but it's not going to be out yet, and there's going to be this – there's more time before you're actually going to see it. They had hands-on sessions to most media representatives that were decidedly hands-off. Some people did get their hands on it. David Pogue from Yahoo reports that the watch will be water-resistant, enough to be worn in the rain or sweated on, but not enough to be like dropped in a bathtub. Built-in microphone and speaker will let you make phone calls with it, and you'll apparently load applications on the watch through your iPhone, not the watch itself. Finally, a Ping My Phone feature on the watch will make your iPhone ring out to help you find it. So at least if you got the watch on your wrist, you can find your phone. And the Gold Apple Watch Edition, there's three levels. There's like Sport, Business, and Gold. And so one is stainless steel, one is aluminum, and one's gold. The Gold Apple Watch Edition will have a jewelry box case that doubles as its charger. None of the features are completely new to smartwatches. Android Wear and Samsung Gear watches have covered the ground before. So it'll be interesting to see what the full picture is on the Apple Watch. They showed some impressive stuff. If you look around, there's a sort of video loop that shows how they expect people to use it. But this is a little bit vapory, and I wonder if Apple is not announcing it early to freeze the market while they finish getting this produced and working the way they want it to. Because obviously they're not ready now, and January is quite a while away. And that is the InfoShot News. I'm Peter Hughes.
All right. There's a great blog up at medium.com, which is kind of like Mystery Science Theater 3000 meets the live Apple Live event. Nice. They did a live blogging of the event, but the snark in here is really good. It says 10:45 a.m. Tim Cook. What we realized is that the experience of losing one's phone and the misery of misplacing your wallet were still not a single integrated experience. Oh, it's a great. If you go to, it's called. Let's see if I can go to the top, because it's live blog Apple Live event September 9, 2014 at medium.com, and it's really a great spoof of the whole live event. I will say that I was, you know, I brought my MacBook Air to work so I could watch the live blog, and all the technical issues were really frustrating.
Yeah, I fortunately was like busy, so I didn't. It wasn't until fairly late in, and so I didn't bother to try to get on the video thing. I followed one of the tech blogs that does where they post images and kind of live blog underneath it. Yeah. So theirs was working.
But I did. I will say that they actually made the wearable interesting looking to me. What have you found? Oh yeah,
have you seen that picture yet?
No.
Someone's taken the Pulp Fiction Christopher Walken with the talk about the watch and all that kind of stuff, and they photoshopped in the whatever it's called, the not my watch,
the Apple Watch.
Yeah, the Oatmeal had a great thing they tweeted out, yeah. Which was like, can you tell the time? Why, ball. Sure, just a minute. He got the spinning beach ball on his watch, so he can't tell what time it is. I think the only thing that the watch really is lacking that it needs is a camera. It needs like a little sideways facing camera so you can like look down at your wrist and have the live view of what you're seeing through the camera.
How can we outcreep Google Glass? Oh, I know, spy camera watches.
Camera watches.
The Apple upskirt cam.
Hey-o. All right, well, we're going to get on to the other part of our show, which is the phone-in portion of our show. This is where you call in, and you talk to Groovehouse, and he answers your questions, and then you hang up, and we still beg for calls. 713-526-5738.
Everybody gets on the air tonight.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
He's call feeling in. Generous.
No, I mean, I'm afraid of expressing any interest in the new Apple products for being, you know, fear of being called a, you know, whatever they call those people. But
fanboy.
The watch does look interesting. I got to say. I mean, I don't know if I need a $350 watch, but it does look interesting.
My theory is Apple must feel like it's going to be really compelling by the time it's released, or they wouldn't have said something now.
I think they're letting people percolate on the idea for a little while. That'll drive interest in it. And they, you know, if they've released or if they announced what's basically vaporware right now, like you said, to freeze the market, so everybody's thinking about getting a wearable, and Apple has presented a device that's certainly light years ahead of all the other offerings out there in terms of wearables, if it works as advertised.
It's a solid strategy. I mean, the best way to make a geek want something is to say, hey, you can't have this. Yeah, you know, you've got to wait
for it. And I guess the other piece to it is if you were like Flicted and you're going to go do it and you're going to pay in full, if you bought the iPhone 6, which you really kind of need, you can use, I believe, a 5S or a 5S with the phone or with the wearable, but obviously you're going to get the most out of it with the 6. Then you're talking about between the phone and the watch, you're talking about $1,000.
Yeah.
$1,000, like the cost of a pretty serious laptop nowadays for the two devices.
The other thing that's kind of, I guess, a little distressing to think about on this device is that while I cannot see myself necessarily exploiting all the features of this watch, there's a generation behind us that will totally, you know, thrive on what this brings to the table in terms of their electronic life, you know, and the way to interact with social media and the way to interact with a portable device. I think there'll be people that really, 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 really use this.
I think students and people who work in, you know, regular corporate environments are really going to benefit, because now you can't, you know, before you couldn't really like take your phone out and look at it if you got a text in a meeting without looking rude, where just casting your eyes at your wrist, like to your watch, if it's done subtly enough.
And with the haptic feedback for you to get, like, you know, take the vibrate in your pocket and put it on your wrist. I guess it'll be phantom vibrating wrist syndrome.
Yeah,
now.
Although kids are probably going to take them off in class or at least during tests, I would assume. I mean, if you can cheat with the pocket calculator, oh, wow, could you cheat with a watch?
Yeah, yeah, I thought about if the watch would be of interest to me. And the thing is, the way I end up working, most of my time is at my, you know, home office at a desktop with multiple screens and all that. So right now I don't have a really compelling kind of use case for it as much as I would like to. So I may hold off.
I didn't pay attention to the covering. Is that made out of like Gorilla Glass or what's to keep it?
It's
from
sapphire.
Shattering? Sapphire.
Okay. And it's coming in a number of different shapes and sizes too. So you've got solid, you know, got gold plated, you got silver, you got cast.
I would be more worried about just cracking the face. Like, you know, like how long.
How do you? Yeah. Well, that brings up an interesting question.
How did
wristwatches work out for you as a young man?
I don't wear wristwatches, if you notice.
I know that you don't.
I was
now.
Hard on them. Yeah.
They actually rate watches in terms of Barrett months.
So, you know, I agree with you on that. I don't necessarily have a need for it, but it has a certain, like, you know, I wouldn't mind having a watch.
It's got an appeal because, I mean, for nothing else, you know, every time I check the time, I risk dropping my phone on the cement. So if I could cut that down, you know, not have to do that 5 or 10 times a day, that would be good.
Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't too excited about it just because I don't see the need for it for me. And, I mean, I know there's a certain subsegment of the population that had interest in the Pebble that I guess has interest in Android Wear watches, although I don't know that I've ever seen anybody wear one. I have seen a couple people with Pebbles.
Right, yeah.
To me it's a little odd just because it seems like to me a lot of society has stopped wearing watches because they have phones. And so the smartphone, the phone and the smartphone have kind of got people to stop wearing watches, and now they're trying to go back to get people to put watches back on their wrists again.
What's going to happen is, I mean, you're always going to go, I think, to a single device. So, I mean, maybe the phone will eventually disappear and your phone will just strap onto your wrist, you know, or something.
Yeah, but that's
like
going to
that,
be,
you know,
at some point way in the future, right? Because you're going to have to get the antennas on it.
Maybe they'll
And the processor.
Maybe they'll come out with pocket watches now.
What you're going to see is you're going to see somebody wearing one of the Apple Watches or other wearable devices, and you're going to ask them for the time, and they're going to reach in and pull out their phone.
Well, the thing is, the Android Wear, it only works with Android phones, right? The Apple Watch only works with iPhones. So, I don't know. I mean, the Pebble is e-ink. I'm assuming it works just via Bluetooth with any device. That's I assume.
See, that opens up a lot of things, too. Like, what, you know, how are they securing the connections? You know, I guess it's just standard Bluetooth pairing. Nothing special.
I wonder. I think it's... And I don't remember the exact details, but I thought that they were using a more advanced Bluetooth, you know, one of the, it's not the just like regular everyday Bluetooth. I know that, you know, one of the things I think that may get a lot of people into it also.
Is a good solid internet connection.
I bet he was going to say the fitness craze, because I mean, a lot of people are wearing, you know, devices that do like the pedometer stuff.
That's the one area
I
could see people actually being excited about. I don't know about the price point necessarily. But I know a lot of people do the fitness stuff, and they spend some money on the software and the little things they wear on themselves to keep track of their information. So I could see that possibly being something that people would buy it for.
To carry your phone is the thing. So maybe all it could do is maybe, you know, like monitor your pulse or like, you know, whatever you would need to touch skin for. You know, it could do a few things like that. And I guess you could also glance down and, you know, instead of having to pull the phone out, you could see, like, okay, I'm on pace, I've got X more amount of miles to go or something like that. So that, I guess there's some benefit to it.
So think of the benefit to all our grandchildren when instead of hearing Grandpa talk about whatever his bathroom experiences are, he'll show the graph on his watch. Come over here, kids. I've been eating fiber.
Oh, man. Oh. All right, so 713-526-573. I am thinking that I'm going to go with the iPhone 6 Plus as an iPad replacement. I don't really need the iPad so much, but I wouldn't mind having just a single device. It's a phone and a bit of a, you know, phablet.
Somebody tried to sell me the iPhone 6 Kaiju, but I figured out it was a MacBook Air, or not a MacBook Air, that it was an iPad Air, and iPad I blew them off.
All right, Groovehouse, I see we have a call in the queue.
Yes, we do.
I'm going to let you know that the phone number here is 713-526-5738. If you would like to be on the air, we have one call in the queue and all the other lines are open. This show is here for you. So if you want to talk about the new Apple devices that are coming out or if you want to talk about any other computer-related issues, we invite you to dial in 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up first, we're going to speak with John.
John, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, I've got a question. I'm an idea kind of guy. I've got lots and lots of great ideas. But what my question is I spend a lot of time on a computer, so I come up with a lot of ideas for how the computer needs to be improved. Mm-hmm. But what I don't know is how to make money off of that. How do I make money off of my great ideas? I would love to walk away with $100 million for a new app. That's the question.
Well, you have to either... have you called in with this question before? Because it sounds familiar.
No, this is the only time I've called in with this question.
Right. Well, we had somebody call in with a similar question, and what I told them was that you really only have two options. One is that you find somebody who's willing to invest in the idea that you have. You have to find venture capitalists. Not easy to do with just an idea in your head. What's more likely going to amount to you making something of this is to learn how to do it and be able to do a proof of concept. So if you have an app, if you can at least dummy up a concept, you know, a mock-up of it, either, you know, as actual software or at the very least as some kind of storyboard or something to kind of demonstrate it, you have to write up a proposal. You can't just say to someone, I have this idea for this app that, you know, tells time on Mars without showing them, first of all, how you would do it or how it could be done and what the benefit of that would be. Okay. I mean, saying you're an idea guy, to me, holds nothing. There are tons of people out in the world that have ideas. I mean, I've got ideas. I mean, wouldn't it be cool if there was some device that was the size of a nickel that had your entire music library on it? Who's going to pay me for that idea? Nobody. You know, I need to be able to do some demonstrations of, you know, what the technology would be involved to do it and what the return on the investment is.
Or if you're a gigantic jerk, which I don't think you are, you could try and go and get vague patents on your ideas and then troll companies that actually build whatever it is that sounds kind of like what you were imagining.
The game's not really set up for app developers like it was a couple of years ago. What a lot of app developers are finding right now, they'll go, they'll spend the time, they'll take their unique idea, they'll get it out there, you know, they'll take all this time. And then within like a week of it being out there, someone goes and they rip off all the functionality because they didn't have to think it up, and they put it out there for cheaper than what your app is. And Apple's not doing a very good job of policing copycat apps right now. So it's kind of hard. You know, those days of, you know, coming up with a great app and walking away with a wad of cash, those are kind of gone, sadly.
If I walk into a venture capitalist and I present my idea, how do I protect myself from the venture capitalist from ripping off my idea?
And you can do an NDA with them before you go in there, but a lot of them won't do it. A lot of them will say, look, you know, just in case someone else comes to me with an idea similar to this, I don't want to lock myself out from this. So a lot of times, because they've got the money, they're in the power seat.
Did you say NDA?
Non-disclosure agreement. Non-disclosure agreement. So you can say, hey, before I show you my idea, I would like you to sign this non-disclosure agreement that says you cannot talk or capitalize or use a derivative of any of the stuff I'm about to tell you. But okay. Because venture capitalists are all about hearing ideas and as many as they can and vetting what's good, a lot of them are going to be reticent to sign off on anything that's going to stop them from, you know, that's going to limit their options in the future.
Well, plus you're going to have a hard time because if you just have the idea that an app that did a certain thing would be cool, you can't patent or protect that idea. You can only protect the underlying mechanism that allows that to happen. Coming up with an idea that it would be really great to have cheap and affordable flying cars is not protectable, but, you know, coming up with a way that
the implementation
that
connects, the implementation of.
So actually learning a little bit more about the craft. So do you develop software at all?
I've talked to one venture capitalist once, but it didn't go anywhere. And I
Do you do any software development yourself? Do you actually program anything?
Not at all.
Not at all. So I mean, the idea of being an idea guy to me doesn't. I don't think it's going to get you in the door anywhere.
If you look online and if you look at magazines like Fast Company and all that, if you look at sort of the venture capital stuff or if you look at Hacker News, there's articles that talk about, you know, being the idea guy. But, you know, you have to have a technical founder too then. So you got to find some guy who can take your ideas and make them reality that you can work with or be a partner with to make something like that work. And there's a lot of debate about. Of course, there's a lot of debate about whether the idea guy is really as necessary if the tech guy shouldn't just do it by himself.
You've got the idea. I mean, the ideas have to come from somewhere. So maybe your best bet is to find someone that just really loves to code and is really uncreative, and they need you to feed them with direction and ideas.
I am creative. Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
What tablets can I buy to get free Wi-Fi anywhere I go, like in a McDonald's or a library? Is there such a thing?
What was the first part of the question?
Well, he's asking what device he could buy to get free Wi-Fi in places that offer free Wi-Fi. Any Wi-Fi enabled device will let you do that.
like a tablet?
Yep.
And, you know, I don't have to pay for the online Wi-Fi.
No, you don't have to pay for the there's two types of connections that you can get with, let's just say, an iPad. There's Wi-Fi, which allows you to join to a Wi-Fi network. And then there's cellular broadband, which allows you to connect to the cellular network. The cellular network you have to pay for, and it has the added benefit of being pretty much available anywhere you are. So if you're, you know, in the middle of a field, you can get online and access the internet. With Wi-Fi, you have to be in proximity to a Wi-Fi access point. And a lot of places offer free Wi-Fi, like Starbucks and the Houston Library or whatever. So if you get a Wi-Fi-only device with no cellular data plan, then you can go to the library and get online with it.
Y'all are really good. I try to listen to you every time I can. You're good. I thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, good luck to you, idea guy.
Hey. Bye. Bye.
Yeah, when you get your $100 million, don't forget to pledge to KPFT for Technology Bites.
Well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of idea people out there, I think. You know, and it if you go back before technology, before computers and apps and all that, and think of it in terms of like writing a book or writing a screenplay. At least if you wrote something, if you created the thing that you then wanted to publish, whether it's a musical album or a book or a screenplay, then you have it, it's done, you own it. You can shop that around to the money people. And they can say, oh, well, that book's great. We'll publish your book. We'd like to make some changes and take some stuff out that we find maybe might be offensive and give it more. They might help you fine-tune it, but you come in with a product.
An editor, yeah, would kind of help clean it up a little bit.
But coming in with an idea, just an idea, there are so many idea people out there. There's people that have ideas all the time. The people that I think that make money on their ideas are people that can actually kind of show a proof of concept.
And one of the things I guess I would add is, you know, if the stuff that's getting, when you hear about people getting, you know, millions of dollars for an idea, they've had some kind of serious insight. It adds to the life, or to, it looks like something that will become part of the lifestyle or be adopted by large numbers of people. I will say, if your lifestyle with technology is looking for a tablet that you can use free Wi-Fi, that's going to be less likely to spawn ideas that you're going to, you know, that are, they're going, you know, other than big ideas that you can sell to the people who use free McDonald's Wi-Fi. The real direction is towards kind of always on connections, or towards people who are using that cellular modem in their tablet or in their other devices, where they're constantly connected and doing things that aren't tied to a small group of locations. So that just might be something to think about on what you're doing with it, because you've got to live it. To have the idea, you've got to kind of have some of the experiences of it, and that, you know, free Wi-Fi is not going to probably be the way that you get there.
All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call, 713-526-KPFT if you'd like to be on the air with us tonight. Groovehouse is standing by to take your call. He is fully clothed. Just want to make sure everyone knew.
As I am every show.
Most shows.
Most shows.
Every show.
Most shows.
Most every show.
Most every show.
There we go. We found a compromise.
Most of the length of every show.
He's mostly clothed. How about that? He's mostly clothed. I mean, there are parts of his skin that are being exposed, so he's not fully clothed. Unless, well, anyway. Well, Groovehouse?
Yes.
Sorry to do that to you.
Well, we're coming up on...
Oh, we are. We Ooh, we have to actually should, yeah. take a short break here. We used to...
We'll get back to Andy, though.
Andy, we'll get your call. We see another call coming in. We'll get to that, but we do have to take a short break here. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Garrett.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Who is clothed?
Internet websites are a jumble of hyperlinks, plugins, and jargon. But at kpft.org, you can find exactly what you're looking for. kpft.org is your community radio station's website, and we feature all the materials you need to enhance your listening experience. Get complete descriptions of programs, find playlists from your favorite music shows, listen to us via the web, or download archives of your favorite shows. You can even pay or renew your pledge online. By visiting kpft.org, you can also receive e-news sent right to your inbox. KPFT's site is the best way to keep up with your community radio station, so mouse on over to kpft.org anytime. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored, Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
Pacifica Radio KPFT has launched an exciting new online tool for you.
It's the KPFT Archive, and it gives you access to the recordings of your favorite shows.
Whether you missed the news last week or you just want to hear the great program from last night, The KPFT Archive offers instant access.
Not only can you listen to past shows, but you can even download shows to your computer or podcast them on your favorite MP3 player.
Grab a pen and make note of this web link.
Ready? Just go to archive.kpft.org.
Music licensing restrictions prevent KPFT from putting up every show on the KPFT Archive.
Still, there is nowhere else in Houston where you can get this kind of radio, and now you can listen, download, and more.
What's that URL again?
Easy. It's archive.kpft.org.
You are tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 9.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
I guess no better time. I didn't see the signal or the handoff.
No, I mentioned that earlier. It is on a different laptop. Unfortunately, not the one I thought I had in my backpack.
So you just picked up one of your laptop-laden backpacks?
I just grabbed the backpack. It like, feels like a laptop's in here. I peeked. This is kind of silvery, and I'm not used to having this in the arsenal. I've got a silverish kind of Dell that looks suspiciously like a MacBook Air from, you know, a dim room, dark backpack, wrong angle.
I could see where people who own laptop might want to delude themselves.
I guess, you know, you walk in, you just kind of cover up the whatever into the coffee shop, and you don't let the hipsters see the...
Those hinges would give it away.
Wait a minute. Yeah. Wait a minute. I'm an idea guy.
You should make Apple stickers.
Little Apple magnets that are like that. You know, that have a phosphorescent or, you know, glow.
I'm an idea guy. Really, you get sued by Apple.
What you do is make... you know how they make iPhone cases, phone cases?
Yeah.
Make a laptop case that's like an Apple shell.
LED lights. You could just put the bite on the other side. Who would know?
I'll call it Crapple.
No, I think you
could do the Simpsons Mapple with the bite out of both sides.
You could put it upside down. You could put it upside down. Because I think if you do, there's something about...
You can just say it's upside down. It's meant to be viewed this way.
There's something about logos, like, because a lot of... because a lot of people that are like street artists or like manipulators, there's something... You can manipulate a logo enough so that it's not infringement.
Is there like a percentage of legality you have to cross? Like, okay, this logo is 80% different. It is now.
I don't know. I just know that I've seen them do that, and my understanding was that they couldn't be sued for doing that. Something
I think 10% different is enough.
When it comes to copyright, my understanding is not necessarily a good legal defense.
So if you turned it upside down and sold it that way, and then when the people put it on, they can put it on upside down, and then it's right side up.
Even better would be to have the logo be a complete apple, and then the part where the bite just blinks on and off.
That's pretty cool. Apple's so litigious, though, I would not be the one to go to market with that product. I'll come visit you in jail, though.
I'm not going to jail.
They were talking about, you know, people were talking about the litigiousness of Apple. But then I was thinking, you know, they already had the Apple TV, and now they have the Apple Pay and the Apple Watch. So I'm thinking like maybe Apple decided, you know, all this suing is getting tedious, So instead of that, we're just going to make all of our products Apple whatever, where Apple is the Apple logo. And then if anybody tries to use it,
is actually taken.
But if anybody tries to use that, obviously it's infringement because it's the Apple logo.
An iWatch sounds kind of a creeper thing. An iPay, it's sort of, I don't know that it has the right kind of
makes
impression.
The I a pronoun instead of a, I don't know.
Instead of internet or meaning whatever the new stuff is.
All right, well, we've got calls in the queue. We got open line 713-526-5738. If you want to join the queue, it will be a pleasant experience for you, and you get to be on the air with Technology Bites. So, Groovehouse,
yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Andy.
Andy, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good. What can we do for you?
Not that I'm terribly interested in the new Apple iPhone, but I was reading some tech blogs last week, and they're talking about the memory, not necessarily the hard drive space, but the memory, and also the CPU speed. And I couldn't find a spec last night when I was looking those up, comparing the 5 to the 6s.
I'd heard that, I can't speak to the things, I heard that the memory stayed the same, and that's why they're not making a big mention of it. Because that was
not upgraded. The CPU was like 13% faster because of some, I can't remember what it was.
They changed the CPU, I think.
It's the A8.
Yeah, it's the A8 instead of the A7. And so I think it's a smaller die, and but it's supposed to be faster, but I don't...
The physical capacity is the 6 Plus, I guess both the 6 and the 6 Plus will go up to 128 gigs of storage.
Yeah.
So that's hard drive space. I'm asking memory.
Right.
Right. That's why I said storage, not memory.
Right. But he wants to know what the memory
but
is.
But yeah, I don't remember them really talking about memory.
No, and they didn't announce new iPads, so there's nothing to compare on that. Because I think there were rumors that the next iPad Air would have 2 gigs of memory instead of one.
I thought it weird they were very hush hush about it, or.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it comes into play in the performance. I don't know what. I actually haven't played with any benchmarks on any of the iOS devices. But I'm wondering if memory comes into play because it's not a multi-purpose. I mean, it doesn't do.
It's not really multitasking.
It's not a multitasking thing. So whenever something doesn't run, it comes out of memory in the way that Apple allocates the memory. It's not like you have to run multiple applications at the same time.
And there's storage for all practical purposes. I mean, aside from what buses on is pretty fast. I mean, whether you get the 16 gigs or what does it go up to 128 gigs on the new phone, it's pretty quick. But I did read a few days ago that the big rumor was that Apple was sticking with 1 gig of memory. And it could upset a lot of people, and it was kind of misleading that they weren't taking steps forward, so they were going to try and not mention it. So I'm pretty sure it's 1 gig. I think if they had upped it, you would have seen an announcement saying, hey,
it does say, according to the, I was looking at the small problem for Apple Incorporated's iPhone 6, is it's 1 gig of RAM.
Yep.
It is 1 gig. Put this in perspective, the Samsung Galaxy S5 and Galaxy Alpha phones pack 2 gigabytes of memory. The LG G3 comes with 2 or 3 gigabytes, and the HTC One M8 sports 2 gigabytes. So there is, but it's, again, excuse the pun, apples to oranges in terms of the way the operating systems work. Apple doesn't require as much memory on the iPhone because it's not a multitasking device.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the answer.
All right. Well, thanks for the call.
Have a good Christmas.
Thank you. Bye.
The other thing that they didn't really...
We're early.
Mention was like really. On the 6, they said the specs and like, oh, it's got this screen and this screen is better. It's bigger.
Well, it also goes up to the 6 Plus has a 1080p screen.
The
finally.
6 Plus does, but the 6
is 720p.
It's more pixels, but it's the same pixel density as the 5S. Mm-hmm. And so it's not competing with other smartphones in that product category as far as pixel density. Most other flagship smartphones of other people have a higher pixel density than the 6.
I think they missed
the
boat, too. They're going 1334 by 750 when they could have gone 1337 by 750.
They've also got to see that next year they'll have the Retina Display 6S and 6S Plus that everybody will have to have because it'll be the higher res thing on the 6.
Speaking of Christmas, Technology Bites falls on Christmas Eve this year.
Dun, dun, dun.
I won't be around.
Ho, ho, ho.
You've got a date at the North Pole or what?
I will actually be in London.
Oh, Doctor Who. That's a dangerous place to be around Christmas. That's when TARDISes fly out of the sky and dinosaurs and spaceships come and all that kind of stuff happens.
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, just about every time.
Really?
I believe, yeah, the reboot of the Doctor Who season, a majority of them start off Christmas Eve in London. Something's wrong.
To the point where I think Christmas special.
Yeah, and to the point, yeah, there's always a Christmas special, and to the point where it becomes a little bit of a joke, like, hey, we're in London on Christmas. Okay. Yeah.
Nerd. All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air. Let Groovehouse take you through the process of getting you in the queue and getting you ready to be on the show. If you'd like to be on the air with Technology Bites, we'd love to have you.
We got one other future show announcement. Next week, I will be in Houston. I have a meeting, and so I will be in town for the show.
All right.
Yay.
The full staff, right? Unless somebody gets sick, so don't get sick.
Okay, well, I'll do the best I can. All right. 713-526-5738. Groove House?
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up next, we're going to speak with Sean.
Sean, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello.
Hello.
You guys are up there talking about all the new Apple stuff. Well, I got a question about an old Apple. I have a Mac 1.1, the tower that was given to me. It still works great. Dual Xeon processor, 8 gigs of RAM. I was able to get Linux on it and get that working. But I was thinking about buying OS X, I think 10.6 is the latest one that will run on this. And I'm trying to find out if it would be worth, doing that, and if it's usable,
I think.
What do you guys think about it?
If you're locking yourself two versions back, because Mavericks is about to hit, and we're about to be a few versions up from that.
Right. We're already three versions.
Yeah, you're already three versions up from that. It's kind of tough. If you've got Linux working on it, you've got a decent distro that's up to date, you're going to get, I think, much more up-to-date software by running Linux, and a little bit better security posture by running Linux than you will by running a very outdated version of OS X.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. Because this version of Mac, all the research I did said the Maverick wouldn't run on it, is what I was being told.
I mean, the chances are if it says it won't, it probably won't. But it probably won't well.
It may run, but it may not.
Yeah, they should have a list. Usually Apple puts out a list that says this is the minimum requirements for what versions will run it.
Yeah, did you get
and
it
it's
from
not
the
like
Apple
Windows
site?
The way they used to do it.
Yeah, where do you get the Intel saying it would not run on your tower?
Apple website.
Okay, then it probably won't. if Apple on Apple hardware, if they're saying, hey, this isn't going to work on that, if it will work, it's probably going to be a frustratingly slow experience.
If it's a G5 Power Mac tower, it won't run.
The operating system doesn't have the code to handle.
It also won't run Snow Leopard. I mean, sorry, it also won't run Mountain Lion or Lion, and maybe not Snow Leopard. I don't remember. At some point, they stopped releasing PowerPC versions of the OS, and I don't remember. I think Leopard was the last one that could run on PowerPC, maybe Snow Leopard, but I think it was Leopard, which is 10.5. I think was the last one you could run on PowerPC processors.
As long as you've got Linux.
Well, I looked at the processor and it says Intel Xeon.
Then that's not a Power Mac G5, because the G5 was a PowerPC chip.
Okay. But
so that's a newer tower. It's an Intel tower. So it could probably run at least Snow Leopard, which is 10.6, I think.
Double check your model.
Is it a plastic case, or is it the one that looks like a cheese grater?
What was that again? I'm sorry.
Is it a plastic case, or is it the one that looks like a cheese grater, a big aluminum cheese grater?
The cheese grater.
Okay.
Big aluminum, huge case, got like 5 hard drive bays and... No.
I always thought those were really pretty, especially how they were really modular.
See, I have one of those, but it's a
G5. When you gave it to me, and I thought, hey, man, if the board and all that doesn't work and nothing else works, maybe I'll mod it and put a PC in it or something. The case is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I love the way Apple does their cases.
But it probably work really well with Linux.
Yeah, especially I was going to say dual Xeons. If you can just make sure that once you compile your kernel, if you do like a CPU info or /proc/CPU info, as long as all your processors are showing up, you're going to have a pretty fast system. Because Linux doesn't ask a lot from a system. It's going to be pretty blazingly fast, I think.
Yeah, I was able to get it working. The only problem is I'd like to get a better graphics card in it, but I'm having trouble finding one for it. I know all the research I did said I can use a PC card, and I just won't see the initial, EFI system. I won't be able to access that during the boot process.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to work through that. Right now I've got to find a Mac video power cord so I can get the new card in there and get it powered.
Okay.
I was just wondering, about the whole operating system thing, the 10.6. It would have been worth $20 to put that on there.
There is a site called Gainsaver that may have some stuff that they have a lot of older Macs, and so they have stuff. Also, MacSales.com, which is OWC has a lot of stuff.
Okay. I'll see what I can find. Hey, thank you guys a lot.
All right. Well, thanks for your call tonight.
Thank you.
I'm reading online now that he's off the off the phone there. It looks like the new versions of OS X actually detect your hardware and will possibly shut you down preemptively and say,
shut
"Hey,
you down.
Don't have, yeah, don't you don't have a, the version of hardware you need to run this," which is odd. But a couple of people are reporting, "Hey, it's saying my hardware is not new
too
enough
old.
And it won't let me do it." Yeah, so it's not like you can even try to install it and just see how it does. It looks like some of these it just says none shall pass, or at least you with the old computer, you're not going to pass.
It's the soup Nazi. No OS for you.
See, I have a dual G5 Power Mac that's just been sitting for 3 years probably. But a while back, I found out that Ubuntu actually makes a PowerPC version. So I downloaded it and made the install disks, but I haven't actually tried to install it yet. But that would be nice because I could actually bring that system back to use it with a modern OS.
All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you'd like to be on the air. 713-526-KPFT. All the lines are open. We got about 45 minutes left in this episode of Technology Bites. We would like for you to participate. I see the phone line is ringing. That's a good sign. Groovehouse is springing into action like a like a leopard.
Yes, I was kind of surprised. I knew that, you know, back in the day when I was looking at, you know, like OpenBSD, a lot of the BSDs and Linuxes, you know, like what the compatibility lists were, and there was a lot of PowerPC. I figured that would have kind of tapered off. It would have gone away. But just about every major modern distro out there, from Ubuntu to Fedora to FreeBSD to Red Hat Enterprise to Gentoo, they all have PowerPC distributions. You can get whatever you need with the package manager and not have to put too much effort into it. It used to just be like Yellow Dog Linux and a couple of others, but I'm on DistroWatch, and they're like the top 10 all have PowerPC distros.
Although when I was looking at it, I want to say it was for Ubuntu, because I looked at several of the distros trying to figure out what I might want to run, and I think most of them said that they no longer are supported directly by the person, like Canonical or whoever, but that they've been tossed off and are now actually run by the community, updated by the community, and so the support might not be quite as accurate.
I mean, hopefully, you know, that's just binary support. If you do have like a system that's based on PowerPC, you can always get the sources and you can always compile for your own system, which is kind of nice. And hopefully it should work if you've got all the underlying dependencies and libraries and everything you need.
All right, 713-526-KPFT. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. I see a phone line ringing, and I see we have one calling the queue. Groovehouse, who do we have in the queue?
All right, up next, we're going to speak with Edward.
Edward, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Howdy. How is everybody tonight?
Good. What can we do for you?
I got a new laptop. I've only powered it up a handful of times, but I went ahead and gave in and purchased the McAfee antivirus stuff that was already, you know, the preloaded package on the Asus laptop. But I guess I've always heard that you need to get a separate spyware program, you know, like Malwarebytes or something like that. I wanted to see what your take was on it, because, you know, the product I just purchased does claim to guard against malware. So I don't know if it's just waste of resources to bog down my computer by also downloading malware bytes.
You never listen to this show, do you?
Not too often.
No. All right. Because we have to talk about spyware once in a while.
Okay.
It is recommended on a Windows computer that you run an antivirus, whether it's McAfee or AVG or whatever. Just constantly running so that you're kind of protected in real time from some of the more common malicious code that's out there. That being said, there is a different classification of malicious software that's known as malware or spyware. And a lot of times that stuff can get on your system and it gets past the antivirus. The antivirus program doesn't see it. It doesn't intercept it, and your computer gets infected. Now, I don't run now. Anything that's running on your computer in real time, like an antivirus program, is using system resources. So if you have a computer that's underpowered and you're running an antivirus program that's kind of fat and, you know, wasteful, it'll slow you down. And obviously, if you run anything else in the background that is going to take up system resources, that'll slow you down more.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really get around the antivirus part unless you're just super good at avoiding that kind of crud.
When it comes to something
like malware protection, my recommendation, the way that I operate, and if you go to our website, I talk about this in extreme detail because we've had this conversation so many times on the air that I actually wrote it down at geekradio.com. But I'll say is that you run your computer, run your antivirus. If you notice that something's going horribly wrong, the computer's all of a sudden acting like it's got a problem that could be because of malicious software, then you have a program like Malwarebytes installed on your computer. It's not running and protecting you in real time. You run it as needed. So if you see a problem, then you run a, you kick off this program and you run a scan. So the only thing that it's using up is disk space and not very much of it. So my recommendation is that you run antivirus program and that you keep a few anti-spyware programs on hand if you're the kind of computer user that tends to run afoul of that kind of junk. So, yes, if you think that you have the chance of getting infected with some kind of spyware or something, it's good to have a program like Malwarebytes already installed on your computer so you can run it. Because once you get infected with the spyware, you may not be able to download anything.
Okay. Well, the computers for my my wife kind of does a data entry type of thing where, you know, she had to basically look up people on the internet. So she's, surfing the internet quite a bit and having to, you know, click on questionable links, you know, trying to find contact information and whatnot. So is there a real time type of, for Internet Explorer, it's a Windows 8 computer that you would recommend a real time, like you were mentioning, for the internet, you know, actual surfing?
Well, that's what your antivirus is designed to do, but you can run programs like Malwarebytes and Spybot Search and Destroy do have real-time scanners that you can activate when you install the software.
The other thing you can do is you can have that computer switch over to another browser like Chrome, and there are a number of extensions that will, for instance, like block redirects, block pop-ups, block JavaScript, block a lot of delivery methods that people will try to get malware on your computer with.
And you may also want to look at setting up the account that your wife logs into the computer under to not have much in the way of privileges. Use the parental control stuff so that software can't really be installed, so that it stays pretty clean.
Yeah, you can, for instance, name it like questionable content or, you know, like DMZ or something. And, you know, if she's going to go into dangerous places, she surfs from that account. If anything happens, you blow just that account away. It doesn't touch any of her personal stuff. It touches nothing that's really important.
And the account doesn't have admin access.
You're able to set up multiple accounts on the same laptop?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Just make sure they are not that they are not administrator accounts. You just want standard user accounts on there. That's the key. You give it a non-privileged account.
And then just, I guess, go to the preferences, area of the account settings or something like that.
When you create the new account, so you'll go to, like, to manage users. When you create a new account, it'll ask you, like, hey, is this like a regular user or is it an administrative account? And you just go regular user, you know, just make it non-privileged. All right. So.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm glad I called. Some other ideas to protect.
All right.
New purchase. So thank you guys so much. Have a great evening.
All right. Thanks for your call. One thing I would like to point out, too, is that your greatest protection from this kind of nonsense is just keeping a good, clean backup of your computer handy. So that it's only software. If you do find yourself infected and all your software corrupted and crud like that, you don't want to get it on there in the first place because some of it will capture data and transmit it to unfriendly forces. But
Like Barrett.
I'm one of the good guys.
Oh, right. He's a white hat. Look at him. Yeah. Oh, wait. That hat is kind of gray.
It's bluish.
It's gray.
It's white in the correct lighting.
Barrett the gray. Sort of white, sort of black.
Groovehouse reached over here and turned off the mics earlier.
Yeah. Because Flicked was quoting movies.
What?
What movies?
Idiocracy.
Ah.
We had to turn the mics off in case.
He was so paranoid, even though they were down, that he reached over and turned them off.
All right, 713-526-5738. Groove House. Groove House.
Yes.
Someday a real Groove House will come and put all the calls on the air.
You need to do the Idiocracy quote now.
No, I don't.
The very, very first one I said.
I don't remember.
When you introduced the caller.
Okay.
Groove House?
Yes.
Was it the Carl's Jr. one?
Go for it.
Maybe. I thought it was Costco, but maybe. No, it was Costco, I think.
I love you.
Yeah.
All right.
Now, Carl's Jr., you couldn't say on the air.
Most of that.
Yeah, a lot of the quotes I were saying, yeah, you can't say on the air.
Yeah, blank you, I'm eating. Carl's Jr.
All right,
Groove House.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Mike.
Mike, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. What can we do for you tonight?
More of a question. It's kind of something to discuss.
Nobody ever calls in with questions.
What do you guys think about quantum computing?
Oh, brother.
What?
Do you ever listen to this show? That's
our running thing. We both simultaneously like it and don't like it.
We believe in it and don't believe in it. It exists in both states. It's like Schrodinger's computer.
And until we're forced to have an opinion, you won't know.
Let me ask you this. When you think of the term quantum computing, what does it make you think about?
Quantum leap.
I got a science background. I'm an undergrad biology. So I think of it in terms of physics. You know, atoms occupying two different spins,
kind of.
Yeah. Two
states.
I can't even remember what
so,
it is.
So as opposed to binary, you have yes or no statements.
Right.
In quantum statements, you have yes, no, and either maybe or both.
Right.
Okay. So there is some good research on it. And I don't claim to be an expert on the idea of quantum computing. But the idea, I suppose, is that you are moving towards the possibility of having artificial intelligence and, you know, lightning fast computations where the computer figures out the answer to your question before you even ask the question, which I guess is artificial intelligence.
I think it has to do with especially like sorting big data, like doing stuff with big data, because you can simultaneously have all the states of the data at once.
It's beyond Boolean.
Right.
I've read about it, but not in a while.
Matrix to figure
Exactly. And that's why I'm getting to.
I think I recommend.
And what I've been reading, I apply it to like a matrix setting, virtual settings, you know, whatnot. And this is a big, powerful matrix or whatever, and a processor that can run it or whatever.
Powered by human batteries.
I just wanted to find out what you guys' opinion was.
I hear a lot of people using quantum computing. It sounds like a buzzword almost.
Yeah,
Google just got into it recently, though, and they're drawing some like top talents. So.
Right. Well, I mean, if I was more of a theoretical physicist, I suppose I might have an opinion. But it comes down to
can run Quake on it, we're not interested.
Yeah. On the practical side, there have been a few people that have said, "Hey, we've built quantum computers." People have come in and they've looked at it, and there's been some question as to, is that really?
That was the Canadian company,
computer?
Right?
Yeah,
well,
that's
where they said they built it, and people are like, "We're not sure."
Don't exist. I think there's some issues with transistors and whatnot, and I don't get that technical. But what I can understand, the problems don't exist that are big enough or complicated enough to where these computers can even make a difference.
I think the problem that doesn't exist yet is how to get a quantum computer actually functioning and get it implemented correctly. I mean, that's where they are right now. I think they're going to have to retrace a lot of steps that classical computing did.
On the quantum computing the Canadian company had, I read that article. It was in Wired, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
basically, they ran... Based on how they understand quantum computers should work, they ran data sets that a quantum computer should be able to, like, do in seconds what a typical computer would take days or weeks to run, and it was inconclusive because there were some things that the quantum computer ran that were way faster than a normal computer and impressive, but there were other things that it should have done that it didn't. So they're like, okay, maybe you're getting a little bit of quantum effect, or maybe something we don't understand, or maybe it's really not a quantum computer.
So we're still in the state of, I guess, quantum computing just, you know, growing or whatnot.
Theoretical physics are theoretical.
I think there's a lot of unknowns right now.
It's extremely theoretical. And again, D-Wave was the one, the company that was supposed to have the first real quantum computer, and even that's being called into question. So no one has really implemented what everyone can agree on and point out and say, yes, that is a quantum computer.
Exactly. There are no standards. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, supposedly NSA has one. You know, these companies paying these millions of dollars.
I would hope the NSA has one. If anyone's going to have one, it's going to be them, and they're keeping it quiet, you know, to break encryption and chew on stuff. But I even doubt that they do.
You know, I would think that if the technology had been, you know, the NSA does not create technology, I don't think. I think they capitalize on what's out there in the private sector is being done, or in research, in the research sector. They might adopt it, but I don't know that they'd innovate in that way. But, you know.
What about that division of the Army? I can't remember the division, but they
MK Ultra?
Skunkworks. DARPA, probably.
DARPA?
Yeah, DARPA, yeah.
Possibly DARPA.
They're probably looking at it at the very least, or spending money
on it. Listening to this call.
Oh, wow. So I didn't even.
Of course.
I didn't realize this. So quantum computing, even the D-Wave computers right now, the amount of liquid hydrogen and liquid helium that they need to power this goes about for $9,500 for one day.
Right, to keep it cool.
Yeah, just to keep us. I mean, we're nowhere close, man. You can probably call back in two years and we'd have the same answer for you.
But, I mean, I just think that as, you know, technology grows and maybe they find different minerals or whatever to. I don't know how they create the transistors and all of that, but I was just wanting you guys' opinion on, you know, where do you think it's headed? Do you know anything about it?
Well, I mean, I know about as much about quantum computing as I do about the infrastructure of CPU chips. You know, I don't know a lot about it. I don't know, you know, what those guys in the white suits and the clean rooms are building from silicon. You know, I don't know at that level. Take quantum computing off the table. Just talk about processors and talk about, you know, CPUs and the technology that's in there and what it can do is so mind-boggling at that level that I can't really even comprehend that. But that's,
so what about, you know, with Intel? Supposedly they're building, I guess, the smaller processors or smaller.
No, I think processors are getting bigger.
Transistors that go on chips or something like that I've been reading about.
Well, I don't follow that.
I forget exactly what it is. I read something about someone doing some research where they got a different transistor designed, where, you know, like how we went from like vacuum tubes and we went to transistors. It's something along that line of a shift, but it's still a year or 2 years out before they can actually do anything.
Now,
like
you
that.
say you're working on or have a degree in biology, you say?
Yeah, right.
Here's something that you might be interested in researching a little bit. I've only read a little bit about it, but the idea of storing data in DNA.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think that's far-fetched.
No, it's been done. It can be
and
done.
It's good because it's not binary. It's actually
where can I start? I want to read
something.
I want to check that out.
IBM, this is funky. I Googled IBM transistor new and got the DNA transistor from IBM, and it's talking about storing information in DNA.
Oh, wow.
Because the amount of storage that can be stored in DNA is truly mind-boggling.
IBM is using its graphene chips. They're doing some cool stuff with it.
I've seen a couple articles about that.
Yeah, they're saying is going to be able to get things a lot smaller.
All right, cool. Well,
yeah, graphene's magical. Because they're talking about graphene for batteries.
Oh yeah, just being able to get the density and
like
yeah.
Like a graphene battery can fully charge in like a few seconds.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for your call, Mike.
Yeah.
Have a good night, Mike. Hang up there. Thanks.
I'm on it.
Long enough. You'd get like a much smaller battery for the capacity that can charge really quickly.
I bet we have quantum computers before we have flying cars.
We already have flying cars.
Maybe we
before I have a flying car. It works. It flies.
Well, that you can make that true because you just can hold off.
Well, you know, considering we're just now getting Dick Tracy watches, I think, you know, we're getting closer to flying cars for the masses.
I think they've had Dick Tracy-style watches for a while now that operate on Bluetooth. Where, I mean, you have to have your phone with you, but you can do the whole... It doesn't do video. It didn't do video, though, but you could do the, like, talking. You could
make a call and talk to somebody. We've never had it for the masses. It's never been mass-produced, I guess. Because, I mean, you know, arguably, we've had guys that had wearable computer rigs. They were walking around 10, 15 years ago.
There were wrist TV watches.
Oh, yeah.
Where you could watch TV on your wrist... Not watch, but TV. Your wrist TV.
They have digital watches that take, like, replace the hands with actual numbers.
Whoa. Oh, I've got an idea. What if you put a calculator
on
your wrist?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
What if?
Idea, man.
Well, and the wearables where it was the big wrist-mounted keyboards. That's just totally disappeared. You know,
I remember those.
Those were clunky and ugly, but I wanted one. They looked really cool. Someone was even producing like a wearable rig for like
$3,500. Did you have a Nintendo Power Glove?
Yeah, disappointing. My brother did. Which is why I did not.
I never had a Nintendo, so I never had a Power Glove.
Yeah, he did. My little brother had all the game consoles, so I'd have to go and play his.
I had a 2600, but that was the only one I ever had.
I won a Super Nintendo out of a cereal box.
Sweet.
Really?
What?
How big of a box of cereal was that?
I
think it's in that one. That's the only big one. I bet it's in that one.
It was really funny. When my wife was expecting my son, it turned out to be, you know, we talked about, because obviously she was going to have the baby and be at home and that, and we had talked about maybe getting a video game system, and we were at the store and my daughter wanted this one particular cereal, and on the box it said, you know, that they were giving away a Super NES, and I bought two boxes of the cereal because it was on like sale.
216 boxes you bought.
No, literally I just bought two boxes, right. And the second box when we opened it,
winner.
You know, you look in the thing where it always says, you already lost, and it actually said we won.
You may have lost already.
It took like 3 months for them, you know, it took 2 or 3 months for them to send us send it to us, but we got it with like Donkey Kong Country. It came with it and, you know, showed up right after my son was born, and so he grew up listening to this.
So you named your son Donkey Kong?
Yeah, no, but he actually there's the music that it plays and that stuff. He when he was real little, he wanted that to be like played over and over, and you know, when he was a baby.
If you play it now, will it put him back in the fetal position?
No, he actually has gone and bought like older. He bought himself an NES, you know, like Japanese, you know, Famicom, one of the really old ones, where it's the cream colored and red, and he's got all these old game systems that he's collected.
All right, 713-526-5738. The only cereal thing I have to talk about was way back when I was a kid. And you used to be able to, get stuff from having box top lids.
Like a decoder ring, or like what?
Well,
drink more Ovaltine.
In this particular case, the cereal was Quix with the rabbit, and I think it was Quix.
I thought
that was the alien.
Quix. Nestle, yeah.
This was a cereal that had an X. I know you're right. Quick had the rabbit. But this was like something else called Quix. I think it's Q-I-X. No.
Q-I-X is a video game that I really like.
Let me see.
Anyway, it was some
there
kind
was
of
a
cereal.
Quix that had an alien in a space flying saucer.
Yes, Quix cereal. Q-U. Quisp. I believe it was, yes, it was Quisp.
Wascally Wabbit.
Boy, I had to think on it. I had to go. It's Quisp.
The propeller dude.
The propeller dude, yes. When I was a kid, Quisp cereal.
I don't know that one.
Well, I'm a bit older than you are, so. The Quisp cereal had a thing where you could save your box tops and then send in like a dollar or something with the box tops.
Self-addressed stamped envelope.
And a self-addressed, well, no, it wasn't an envelope because they had to ship this package to you. And what you could get was a motorized propeller beanie.
Yeah, 216 box tops and a dollar.
And so you collected your box tops. And, I mean, I was probably all of maybe 6, 7 years old, maybe 8, I don't know, so really, really young. And, but we did this. This was like, you know, after, you know, collecting all these cereal box tops and saving up our nickels.
Was it only that cereal?
It was only mm-hmm. that cereal.
Okay.
So we sent in the box tops, filled out all the paperwork, put in the money. I mean, this was back in the day when you would actually put like a dollar bill in an envelope and mail it somewhere. And sent it off and just, you know, it of course, it had the standard disclaimer, wait 6 to 8 weeks, allow 6 to 8 weeks for delivery. And I remember, you know, day one, every day, waiting on the mail to arrive.
Was it pink?
Huh?
Was it pink?
I seem to recall that it was gray, but my memory fails me.
Box tops from Quix. Free pink beanie. Look
was it
that.
A pink beanie?
This one was pink with a propeller, yeah.
Yeah.
That looks plastic.
It was plastic.
Nice, like a little derby.
But here's the deal. I distinctly remember, this is like, you know, I come from the age of like when you could buy, you know, submarines off the back of comic books, which were probably going to be just some kind of cardboard contraption or something, but you kind of hoped that it would be some thing that would actually, you would read the fine print trying to figure out if it would actually go in the water or not, and you never could quite tell. So should I buy this thing?
But the real live bat that you could put outside the window that would screech like a real bat to scare your friends.
But at any rate, let me finish my story here, hold on, because it finally did arrive, and I don't know if it was 6, 8 weeks or a year later or whatever. It finally showed up, and I was so excited because based on my experience and what I saw in the commercials with this Quix guy, that thing should have allowed me to fly.
Right.
I should have been able to put that on my head, fire it up, and fly.
The problem was you forgot to strap it on, right? And it flew off when you turned it on.
The problem was is that nothing flew.
You were too fat.
Aw, too much. Eat less Quix, kid.
I ate too much. No.
Because of all the Quisp you ate.
But I distinctly remember putting it on my head, expecting to fly, not flying, and my little brother
snatched. And your childhood ended.
No, my little brother snatched it away and said, "You're doing it wrong." And then he failed to fly and he destroyed it.
Wow.
We were just so bummed out. And he particularly, because we were waiting for this thing to arrive. So,
So I didn't know this. So Quisp got pulled from the shelves in the mid-70s, doesn't say why, tried to come back in the mid-80s, got pulled again. And they're claiming they were the first internet cereal, the first cereal to be sold online only in the 90s.
I don't know. I didn't. My relationship with Quisp was sour.
So what kind of cereal was it?
Ooh, and in 2008, it was sold again in limited quantities at Dollar General stores in select areas.
Dollar General, what, dollar.
Probably back stock
what
from
kind
the
of,
80s.
What kind of cereal is it?
It was they were shaped like little flying saucers, and it was mostly sugar and sugar and a little bit of
it was like
a
Captain Crunch in the form of a sugar.
Say maybe like Cookie Crisp, because the Cookie Crisp is kind of shaped like a UFO.
And I don't know. But they used to call it the Quasi Energy Cereal. Yeah. Sugar equals energy. it says the taste is similar to Quaker Oat cereal, Captain Crunch. Yeah, it was a lot like Captain Crunch in UFO form.
Okay.
But it didn't give it.
Was it made by Quaker? Because that would make sense with the Quisp.
It was Quaker Oats. Yeah, yes. It was Quaker Oats, okay. Yeah. So at any rate, that was, you know, the first time that I was completely misled by my own preconceived notions and some, you know, shady advertising from a cereal company.
Nice.
So your place, your whatever that game that was that Pete got, he got a better deal than I did off of cereal. So that's what brought that up.
See, the thing I remember from cereal is they used to print records.
Oh yeah,
I remember that too. I had a Jackson 5 ABC record from cut out of the back of a box of cereal. Wow. See, when the internet was in cereal form, before they put it on computers. Yeah, all right. Well, we got a call in the queue. 713-526.
And one that dropped. Yeah, we were dropping calls. They must have gone to get cereal.
They got hungry. Got the munchies. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up next, we're going to speak with Annette.
Annette, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
I had a question. I work at a pawn shop, and we have several iPads that are locked at the activation screen with the previous owner's email or the iCloud password?
Yeah.
Or ID, I'm sorry. And
have you tried to contact the owners of these iPads to get them back to them?
No. Yes, but the only thing that's up is the first letter, and the rest of the email is it has dots. Hiding the rest of the email
right
address. Is there any way to retrieve that email back?
Well, the idea is that the iPad is locked to the owner, and there's no way on an iPad, a locked iPad, to reach out or send an email to somebody to tell them that you have their stolen property. But you might be able to take it to the Apple store and find out. They might have a record of it based on a serial number.
Okay, so I'd be able to get their information from the Apple Store.
I don't know if the Apple Store would give you their information. They might contact the user on your behalf. What do you got there?
Okay. I just know that you can actually, I don't know if this is the direction you want to go, you can wipe them if you just hook them up like to a Mac.
No, she's trying to, find the owner.
But it sounded like she wanted to unlock, so it sounds like you can unlock. Yeah, but I would go through the Apple Store and maybe see if you're trying to find the owners. But you can just totally, completely wipe them. But once you do that, all of it's gone.
Right, you can take an iPad, connect it to iTunes, and it should allow you to erase the device and get past the passcode and all of that.
Will it do that even if it's locked?
My iPad was activated.
Mm-hmm.
So it shows that it won't.
Yeah, I thought if you had if you were hooked into iCloud and you had the Find My device on, you couldn't through iTunes. You couldn't wipe it. Because it's basically considered stolen in their
mind.
There
needs to be a two-way function then if you actually find someone's iPad that has that on there, to where you can like hit the button and it just like emails them or calls them or lets
that
them
would
know.
Be,
or
that would
messaging
be...
like, hey, I'm standing here, I found this here.
Because
I
you can do it the
here,
other way. Here. I mean, yeah. if yours gets lost, you can send a message to your iPad saying,
Contact me at
this number or whatever.
Yeah, there needs to be the reverse of that. So people
let me ask you this, as an employee of a pawn shop and somebody brings in an iPad to sell to you, or I guess they pawn it first and then they never come back and get it, and then it comes up for sale, right?
Correct, yeah.
So when it comes in, you don't have to test the functionality of something necessarily, but if you're going to give a loan on it, wouldn't it make sense to like say, hey, show me that you can, that this iPad works, show me the home screen, show me that.
Or get them to write down the username and password or create a separate account or even just like take all their data off, you know?
Or even just a
we get the password, but the thing is, we learned that you need to turn off Find My iPad.
Yeah. So, I mean, it could be that the legitimate owner has pawned it and then was unable to come up with the money to get it out of pawn, so now the pawn shop owns it.
The pawn shop should have the owner's information, right? Because they're the one that pawned it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you contacted the person who pawned it off the pawn ticket? See what they said?
Yeah. Well, we don't get their phone number.
No.
No. Yeah. And everything that we take in gets sent to the department. The police department has access to all the information. So, but I've also heard of a Dolce that can bypass that. Have y'all heard of it?
Say that again.
Dolce, D-O-U-L-C-I.
I'm sure there's a way to break into it. What to do before selling your way? D-O-L-C-I?
Oh, yeah. It's a
D-O-U-L-C-I.
iPass is iCloud authentication. Let's see.
But I've heard of it, but I've never...
It's possible that if the Wi-Fi was if it's a Wi-Fi only or if the Wi-Fi was left on, you could actually, if it's set to auto join, you could actually make it hook up to a Wi-Fi access point, and then that Wi-Fi access point would tell it that it's the iCloud system and send back an unlock code or whatever, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so
I don't know if that's what it does.
It says if you have locked... are you sure the Find My iPhone prevents you from wiping it?
I thought I read... And maybe it's only in more recent versions or something, but I thought it did do that now.
Yeah, it's the 7.1 version of iOS.
Yeah, I think maybe with iOS 7 or 7.1 it does that now.
Mm-hmm.
Because Apple, according to some articles I'm reading, it says, you know, Apple, if you set a passcode on an iPad and you forget it, I mean, it's possible that as the owner of the iPad that you could forget your passcode and you've never synced it up with iTunes, that there's a way to get past it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the key is, let's see, Apple thought about this possibility, made a way for a device to be reset. The key question is, you have already synced your iPad with iPhone or iTunes. I would just basically say how to reset forgotten iPad passcode and look online, and there might be a way to do it. I haven't had to do it. I'm not really sure how to do it right off the top of my head, but there should be a way to like connect it to iTunes and have iTunes recognize device and wipe it.
Well, it used to be that you could completely wipe it, but I think they changed that at some point where if you don't know the passcode, you can't completely wipe it. You could install from a backup, but if you don't know your passcode and it's on the backup, then that doesn't really help you either. And if you don't have a backup, you never hooked it up to iTunes, then I don't know now if there's much you can do, unless you can find a hack.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I'd sort of have a better answer for you on that. It sounds like you have a legitimate reason to try to get into one of these. But I would, you might try just doing some searches on, forgot passcode iPad and see if anything points you in a direction that might let you get onto the device.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Good luck. Thanks for your call.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.
Pawn shops. All right, Groove House.
Yes.
I see we have another call in the queue.
Yes, we do.
Who's up?
Up next, we're going to talk to Ray.
Ray, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, I'm an idea guy, too.
All right.
Hey, you've been listening to the show.
I was just laughing at your anecdotes about ordering stuff from back in the old days. I did the same thing with Bazooka Joe. I remember getting some kind of little trinket or something for a whole bunch of little rappers. But anyways, every time I listen to you guys, it takes me back to the day when I got my first Amiga 500 computer. And I remember how it used to lock up on me. I used to create artwork on it and stuff, with this little program called DigiPaint. And they used to, once after you did a few things, it would lock up on you and wind up with some interesting things on the screen. But anyways, that was just my little deal. I just... sitting here cracking up with you guys.
All right.
Did you play Lemmings?
Linens?
Lemmings.
No. Is that a program or
that was
a game,
a really, really popular game on the Amiga.
Yeah, I never did play games, actually. Everything that I liked to do was just write, had the word processing capabilities and create art, basically, and that's what I enjoyed doing.
Well, I thought the Amiga was amazing for the way that it processed colors, and I thought that, it could do some cool animations, and the fluidity of the graphics was amazing. I saw an Amiga before I knew much about computers at
all. They had that video toaster for the Amigas, and for years and years in video production, everybody used those video toasters to do like effects on video as it was being passed to live television.
Right, ESPN was supposed to be very much. Amiga-oriented with their commercials and all that stuff, animation like you're saying that they did. And, it was just funny about, it didn't take long to freeze up the machine back then compared to what we got now. But anyways, I just cracking up with you guys. But, hey, have a good night, guys.
All right, thanks for your call.
Enjoy yourselves. Bye-bye. Right,
bye. So Groove House has sent me some photos of the Quiz beanie, and boy, I'm just so sad now.
You want to smash something, don't you?
It was Quisp and Quake. There was another one. They had a Quake series.
Oh, was Quake the construction worker with the helmet?
Yes.
Yes, I think okay. so.
I don't remember that one either.
I remember seeing it in the images for Quisp.
I remember the my favorite were like the Count Chocula, and then you still see that Frankenberry, the strawberry you don't see, and then Booberry, the ghost helmet you don't see.
No, it came back.
Still? Really?
It came back. Yeah. So see that actually, what I was gonna say. So yeah, when I was little, there was Frankenberry, Count Chocula, Booberry, and there was the mummy. Or actually, it was a wolf. It was a wolf man. That was the fruit flavored one, and then Booberry disappeared, and the fruit flavored one disappeared. And so for years, all there was Frankenberry and Count Chocula. But then I found out at some point in time, Booberry still existed in like some other states. Not in Texas, but in some other states.
Distribution, yeah.
And then after 10, 15 years went by, and then Booberry was available again in Texas. And they added Yummy Mummy, which was a mummy instead of the Wolfman.
I don't know if I ever knew that there was a fourth one. I was just there's just those three.
Watch,
were on my radar.
It's a Quentin Tarantino film. I want to say it's Kill Bill. When they're in the kitchen, and they reach in to get a box of cereal. I can't remember which movie it is. Anyway, he has it. He has that box. It's that box of cereal.
Nice.
It's like I forgot what it's called, but yeah.
So if was it Annette?
Annette.
Okay, so if Annette's still listening, I found there is a kind of funky workaround. I found it by Googling iOS 7 forgot restrictions passcode, and this is instructions on someone getting around parental controls. But it looks like if you more or less you're booting it from a hard restore, you're going in, you're editing some plist stuff, and you're doing some things to get it to bypass that. It's a one shot thing, and it looks like it may work. If she's listening,
how would she find it?
Discussions.apple.com, and again, the heading of it is iOS 7 Forgot Restrictions Passcode, and it's three pages into it. Someone says, hey, by the way, do this. It works for that as well.
All right. Well, we are rapidly running out of time. Awesome. Great show. Perfect show. We'll have Pete in the studio next week. It'll be the perfect show.
Yeah, raise the expectations.
And a Barrett time, maybe.
This week's Barrett time next week.
Ooh. Put a little pressure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, everyone. We appreciate you being a part of Technology Bites. We're here every Wednesday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on your FM dial and available online all the time via geekradio.org, geekradio.com, and kpft.org. We're going to get out of here, so we bid you good night. From Technology Bites, I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
Fully clothed.
We love you.
Mostly clothed.
Mostly clothed.
Always clothed.
Never did.
There will be a KPFT benefit on Saturday, September 13th from 4 to 7 p.m. downtown at Beer Paredes, 500 Louisiana Street. $10 cover charge at the door benefiting KPFT includes Beer Paredes pizza buffet, music, dance, and perhaps even a wee nip of Tom Horan's own Irish whiskey. Proceeds help KPFT to continue to bring great programming to you. Again, KPFT benefit happening on Saturday, September 13th from 4 to 7 p.m. at Beer Paredes downtown, 500 Louisiana Street, the Alley Theater parking garage. We hope to see you there. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide. Find us on Twitter at KPFT or KPFT Houston on Facebook. We'll be right back.
Some say the internet has hurt the art of letter writing, but here at KPFT, stamps still get the love and respect they deserve. Did you know you could write to your favorite shows, request a program schedule, or just share your ideas on programming, outreach, and more? Quick, write this down. KPFT's address is 419 Lovett Boulevard, Houston, Texas, 77006. You can send a letter to your favorite shows in care of KPFT, kick your program idea to the program director, or give your pledge to our membership department. Even if you don't have internet access, reaching out to KPFT is as easy as picking up a pen. Show your stamps some love. Again, the address is 419 Lovett Boulevard, Houston, Texas, 77006.